Professional Blake Murphy has brought in his own headset, sign of a true podcast host.
I always have my own headset.
You have multiple versions.
Yeah. Some days I want the earbuds. Some days I want the over the head.
I like this. I kind of like the earbud look. I realized something kind of toxic about me actually in reference to earbuds the
other day. Just something?
Well, one of the things. But it was actually this morning upon reflection. So one of my earbuds is starting to every once in a while just hum. And the earbud is one of the fancy, I don't think that this counts as advertising. It's because everyone has them. It's Apple products. They're synonymous, like, with anything.
Oh, you're talking, okay, the AirPods.
Yeah, the pods.
Sure. Okay.
And I was a big-time holdover for the string era. I was never going to abandon the string. And then I had to buy a new laptop. And that's how they get you, is they go, so you need one thing? Why don't you get all the things?
Oh, by the way, your charging cords don't work anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Either.
I was going to say that nothing actually works from all of your other stuff. So you're actually going to need to buy these other
things. None of it is compatible.
And I am truly, they got me good because I don't know how to work anything else. I'm completely useless. You hand me a different, like something that's not Apple, and I'm just pretending.
I'm good. This is non-Apple corded. I'm that Instagram account of like Wired It Girls or whatever, where it's just like a tribute to people who still wear corded headphones.
I want that. I want to go back to that life because so I get the rattle and hum thing.
I never
got
off it.
So I got the hum going on, and it's annoying because I listen to hours and hours and hours of podcasts a day, and not to brag, but I was in the 90th percentile of Spotify music listeners. Yeah. I didn't want to bring it up about my Wrapped and brag about it more as the explorer that I am. Yeah, I know.
Wow.
I know.
Top, not like the 90th percentile?
Yeah, that's right.
And of all music, just every...
Of all the people who use Spotify, which is hilarious to me because I always think about how many people just have Spotify and don't even realize they're subscribed to it. It just sits there and collects zeros. Anyway, I listen to a lot. Podcasts. I listen to Blake's podcast. I listen to a lot. And I have this hum, and I've been dealing with it now for over a week, and I went and looked at new headphones that were in the $250 range, pretty expensive, and I keep going, there is absolutely no way I'm paying that for headphones. And meanwhile, I'll plunk $250 down on the under in the Cowboys game and lose, and then be mad, and then redouble down and chase bet like I advise everyone not to do, only to see the Cowboys go, no, we're not going to... Relax. You're going to lose all this. Like, I could have bought two sets of headphones to basically turn the fourth quarter of the Cowboys game off. And I just will do that and without even a hesitation. And I'll go, no big deal. Like, that's, and I justify it, but I'll do things like, that's just part of the business. Like, you know, you gamble, like sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
It's part of the job.
Yeah. And with headphones that I would use every single day that are the cost of one Cowboys fourth quarter, I just can't seem to wrap my mind around justifying it. And I'll sit there tapping away at my headphone going, please stop buzzing like a lunatic on the train. Like I'm a CIA operative on the train going, we're losing connection here with base. Anyway.
I always feel insane when I do that. I'm in public. Keep going like this.
It's really bad.
Have you considered winning your bets?
Yeah.
And then using that money toward...
I consider it every day.
Okay. Because you gave me crap earlier in the week because I'm getting new speakers and a new rig for my vinyl station.
Yeah, you're rich.
Yeah. And that was funded by a good NFL Sunday.
Yeah.
Not the NFL Sunday I attended in person, though.
Yeah.
That was a disaster of
At
an
least
NFL
Trevor
Sunday.
Lawrence didn't die.
Sure.
That was nice. You thought he was dead?
I thought... There were some ACLs and MCLs and PCLs. Like, I thought his ACL landed in my beer.
For sure.
That looked real bad.
That was cool. You and your brother did that.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, you had a blast.
Yeah, we got dirt cheap tickets to the Red Wings, too, on Saturday night.
Drunk.
My brother's not really a drinker. And he's also, he had ruptured his patella, so he, he's pretty immobile. So we had to, it was actually great. The people at the Red Wings game and the Lions game, we had booked the Lions tickets way ahead of time. So this was before he had knee surgery and stuff. But people were great about switching seats with us so he could sit in a way that he had a little bit of space. And the Red Wings game, I got handicap accessible seats and they were not accessible to him and people switched with us. It was really nice.
That's what Detroit is known for. Nice people.
I was about to say.
Everybody being nice.
That and Tim Allen just slanging it.
Yeah. Detroit's on the way up though. I got to get back to Detroit. It's been really long. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've been there. Okay, so Blake Murphy is here. You were going to come in because I wanted to do an hour with you on a bunch of Raptor stuff that I've been sitting on. I actually have a document called Blake, and it's been compiled for over a week of different things that I've been sitting on for the Raptors. But before I do that, I need to get a little bit of Blue Jay stuff off my chest because this is actually not what I expected. And it's early in free agency, and the point was made to me yesterday by Ben Nicholson-Smith, and it's an astute one of, hey, nobody wins in free agency, and this is usually a bit crazy season. And the Jays have done work the past couple of off seasons late, right? Hyunjin Ryu, I believe, was the last guy of significance that was signed to the Jays. Everyone thought they blew it in the pitching market, that they were supposed to go out there, they were going to grab somebody, and no one thought they were going to get Ryu.
No, it was like Christmas. I remember it was Christmas time because there was like Ryu watch. We knew he was in the city, and I was curious if he was going to show up at the Raptors game.
Yep.
He didn't.
So they traded for Chapman late.
Mm-hmm.
They signed Semien fairly late.
Springer was kind of late too, right?
Ish. Last year threw everybody off because they got Barrios and Gausman done, bang, bang, immediately. The season was over. They closed the doors of the Rogers Center, and then they went, welcome these new players. They're arriving. They're going to be here. So this might age poorly, but whatever. I don't really care. Seeing Xander Bogaerts get signed yesterday to a big money deal was infuriating to me. Seeing the money that's getting splashed around by other Major League Baseball teams, it makes me feel as someone who, cares about the Blue Jays. Like, this was the offseason of go back to your place. This is your place. You're a middle-tier team. You can take some shots every once in a while, but that this competitive window, the big money spending is done. Maybe you land Brandon Nimmo. Ben Nicholson-Smith knows infinity more than I do. The guy is plugged in like nobody's business. When he said, don't hold your breath for Nimmo, I took that at face value. I'm going to believe that they are no longer the front runners for Brandon Nimmo. The starting pitching, like the outfield stuff, though, I'm not even really concerned about that. The starting pitching equation, to me, is kind of dire at this point.
Well, look at the drop-off after Rodon.
That's it. So they're not in on Rodon. They're not.
They haven't heard anything to that effect. Yeah, it doesn't sound like it.
If they're in on Rodon, they went to the Masai Ujiri School of Business and decided that they were going to go zero dark 30 and not allow anybody else even close to that negotiation. There are discussions that the Blue Jays feel comfortable, quote unquote, about the idea of bringing back Kikuchi and Mitch White as the fifth starter tandem. This is all to say, by the way, that Jose Barrios, who was bad last year to the tune of people thinking he might not finish this contract with the Blue Jays, being this team's number three starter, the nerves are going up. I'm starting to get a little bit, angry.
Also, the problem with White and Kikuchi being the number five starter tandem is that you don't have a number four starter between Barrios and those guys. So even if that's your thing, right now, they would enter the season with the rotation with White and Kikuchi in there. And if someone were to get hurt, we're kicking the Thomas Hatch, Anthony K can again.
Yeah.
And sure, there will be a million minor league deals or training camp invite stuff. But if they're going into the season comfortable with those two guys penciled into the rotation, they have a very different comfort level with starting pitching than I do.
I'm really not liking this.
And starting pitching, you know, we can do this with the bullpen where there's a ton of evidence you can build a bullpen on the fly. It is way more expensive to acquire starting pitching in season.
But there's also, in season, sure, you got to get there. Maybe they make that move at a deadline for a starting pitcher. Who knows, like they did with Barrios. But again, as of right now, nobody's trading starting pitchers. This offseason so far looks a little bit like the offseason from hell. They have missed on the guys that they wanted. They are no longer the front runners, and now Brandon Nimmo's market appears to be getting into Cuckoo's Banana Land, where even if you do sign him, you're going to go, boy, that's everything in that basket.
You got to think the Giants are rerouting some of that Judge money.
And that the Mets are still looking to try to keep their own guy.
Especially after Bogaerts signed San Diego.
Of course, man. Of course. These teams are spending money because guess what? When you're trying to win, you know what you have to do? You have to spend money. You have to go outside of your comfort zone with contracts. And that's what pissed me off about the Bogaerts thing is I went, San Diego, has this core of younger guys and they recognize that this is a time to win? Have they missed on stuff? Like, did they make the Clevinger trade that backfired on them immensely? Of course they did. Did Soto give them everything that they wanted and more? I still think that trade was an absolute steal of a steal.
And you've got years of Soto left.
Yes. But they just attack it. It's not done. They go, yeah, of course we have good players. Toronto, almost Jays fans have this mentality of, well, they already have Bo at shortstop, so that's like that's already done. Who cares? Go and get more good players. They already went out and paid Springer a couple of off seasons ago. Who cares? Go pay more money. Free agency is the pathway for this team right now. I hate the mentality of, well, they've got guys down the road that they have to pay. You know who else has that problem? Every team in baseball. That's not a unique to the Toronto Blue Jays issue where they're the only franchise that has guys they might have to pay. The worst part about it is that we're already being prepared for a world without Bo Bichette. That so much of this conversation is they're probably not going to re-sign Bo. They're probably only going to keep one of these two guys on a big ticket contract, and then it comes down to Manoah. Yeah. I just get off your wallet, but also I'm with Blue Jays fans sharing the frustration of, oh, they were in on this guy. Oh, they were rumored. Oh, they checked in on this guy. Okay, but who cares? Who cares if you're checking in on guys if you're not giving them meaningful you're not giving them meaningful offers? I know they offered Andrew Heaney more money. Okay, so then when he came back and said it's going to take more money to go from the Rangers to you, then get it done if he's your guy. Because as of right now, what, you're going to end up having to pay somebody that Andrew Heaney money who you like less.
Drew Smyly, like that's the next tier of guy down after Rodon.
Noah Syndergaard.
And Stripling's kind of in a tier of his own as a...
Ross Stripling played this well.
Yeah, I mean...
Ross Stripling's looking good. Ross Stripling is very... he's going to be a happy man.
I said yesterday on Drive Time with Ben that, like, if the Jays could sign him to the qualifying offer right this second, I think they'd jump at that.
Oh, my God. Like, of course they would.
After seeing these deals. So the other thing, too, with all this, because it's not just about money. The Jays talked about we have all these different paths to improve. We're in such a good spot foundationally because last year was, like, not a worst-case scenario, but things didn't break as well as you'd hope last year, and we won 90 games for a second year in a row and made the playoffs. That's fine. So you have all these different pathways to improve, but they start getting closed off, right? Like, let's say Aaron Judge was a pathway. It wasn't, but that one's closed off now. Justin Verlander was a pathway. That one's closed off now. You start to see these paths narrow. They also seem to have misread the catcher trade market because...
Oh, I didn't even get to that.
Because Contreras, like, 5 years, $87.5 million, is a big dollar amount, but suddenly that Cardinals domino really makes it feel like the teams that don't have catching might be okay with that. Like the Astros just won a World Series with a guy who hits like me catching every day because of the vibes and the game calling.
Not only
and
that,
stuff.
They went out and got Vasquez, who ended up coming up on with a big hit for them at a pretty minimal price in the middle of the season. It's something that they feel like. Why would you as a team look at the Blue Jays and say there's an urgency there? You would be saying, yeah, they might sit on those guys and then have to make a decision where the prices come down. No, the Cardinals domino was huge, dude.
Yeah, and there are still teams that need catchers, but like as a fan base, the selling of yourself on Lars Nootbaar and stuff, like I think the expectation has to come down a little bit. And if we start getting into talking about Michael Brantley seriously territory, that I like Michael Brantley. He can barely play left field anymore, let alone... helping your center field situation.
Not only that, you're talking about a guy who just cannot stay on the field anymore.
And that's as a part-time lefty, left fielder, part-time DH.
And a team that's been saying, we really don't want to clog up the DH spot anymore because we've already got a bunch of injured guys who we need to. We've got Lourdes Gurriel we want to give off days to. We want Vladdy having off days. We want George Springer having off days. No,
so
it's just...
if you want a sprinkle of optimism, if we're looking at what the foundation is, what the floor is, as of this morning... Fangraphs still has the Jays projected at a 54% win percentage. That's not great. It's seventh in the league. Mm. The biggest issue, though, is that it's third in the AL East. Mm-hmm. So if you are going to say you're comfortable with where the Blue Jays are right now, that means you're comfortable with on a projection basis, which these things are flawed. These projections had the Jays winning the division last year. Like, it's fine. It's just context. But you would be saying, yeah, we're fine with coming in as the third favorite in the AL East.
Which I'm not. This is the thing.
No.
This was not about trying to be competitive. This was about this cycle. The Toronto Blue Jays were supposed to be a heavyweight in baseball.
Yeah.
And maybe they were going to act a little bit differently. But now it just feels as though they had a moment during the pandemic where their payroll came down at the right time. they spent some money on a few players, and now they've gone back to that. That cycle is over. The cycle of us being big-time players, market setters, that is over. And that's what I'm saying. That's what's frustrating right now. If you're not going to be willing to go out there and set the market for somebody or be a part of the big money market, then I just think that you're missing this opportunity here. If you are going to win, the pathway forward was always they're going to have to add around this core by spending significant dollars.
Right now.
Which they have done.
The cute stuff is supposed to happen once Vlad and Bo and Manoah are getting paid, because then there's not going to be money to add. Unless you're coming off a couple World Series and the revenues are flowing, there's not going to be that level of, you know, financial flexibility when Vlad and Bo are making, you know, a combined, what, $70 million? Like, this team has, right now we know, like, Shapiro and Atkins have been more open than they have in the past about this team's financial flexibility. They've said things like the competitive balance tax line won't be a hindrance if they need to. They're comfortable being, like, the 6th, 7th, 8th highest payroll in baseball. Okay, then do it.
Yeah, do that.
And again, you kind of set this up the top that it's early and this could look silly after,
but at this point, it's getting late.
I'd be so happy to look silly.
Yeah. At this point, though, the reason why I feel comfortable being this bold in the position is right now what's out there free agency wise that is a quote unquote big ticket item is Carlos Correa, which is not happening. It's Carlos.
Isn't it though?
Yeah. I want that. That's the thing I want more than anything. But yeah,
the thing that I've gotten pretty deep on trying to figure out what it might cost, and it's extremely risky. I want Byron Buxton. There have been rumblings over the last little while that Minnesota would maybe be open to moving off of him because of all the injury history, because he's going to get, he's getting progressively more expensive. He's under contract until 2028, though. Yeah. He is so, so good when he plays, and it would be super risky to have Springer and Buxton sharing an outfield, because if they were to both get hurt at the same time, but if they're both healthy at the same time.
But my issue with that, Blake, is I always expected this team to make trades as well. But they have to use their free agent muscle because they don't have enough. They don't have enough in the system to make trades. Look at where they're at. They're at the point where they have one pitching prospect that really seems to interest other teams, and Ricky Tiedemann. They have Aurelvis Martinez that they can deal from, and it seems like they don't want to deal Gabriel Moreno from their catcher pool, which makes sense because of his contract, his age, his ability, all those different things. Beyond that, it's a lot of, and I know people would say to me, well, who are the fifth guys and the sixth guys and the seventh guys and other prospect systems? This is what prevented them from being in on the Juan Soto thing. Teams didn't feel as though Toronto had the depth. It was Ricky Tiedemann or bust. And then beyond that, even they couldn't get it done. So you start talking about a Byron Buxton trade. Now you're using real prospect capital, and then what? Then what's the next move for you? You can always replenish that, but they're in a win now cycle. Where do they replenish that? How does that happen? When does that happen? They just to me have too many holes. And like, this is why I'm saying it's the offseason from hell. The catcher situation got figured out in St. Louis. You seem to have lost some leverage there. So that's gone. You don't have the same flexibility with your catcher position as you once thought you did. Like, I'm not reading articles every day about remember when the Blue Jays catchers were the talk of the town at the beginning, and now that's kind of died down.
Although I do wonder, this is kind of a separate conversation, but I wonder if Wilson Contreras getting that money, when you see 5 years, $87.5 million, and he's more established offensively, less so defensively, like him and Danny Jansen have very similar projections for the next couple years. I do wonder if that market setter, like, I know I said that domino fell, and I think they misread that, and I think that's true. I do wonder if, you know, say a team that has a catcher 1 year out from free agency or a catcher they're not sure on sees the $87 million price tag and starts to think, well, Danny Jansen at $4 million with an extra year of control is maybe a pretty good asset. Maybe that happens, but again, we're back to giving them a benefit of the doubt that they maybe haven't earned.
To me, and this is the way that I'm going to tie it into the Raptors, and we'll take a break and we'll come back and talk about them. There are times where you can be patient as a front office, and it makes a ton of sense for you, right? But then there are other times where you just actually have to be proactive and aggressive. And inactivity, there is an opportunity cost there. And by the Blue Jays not being a proactive team in free agency this year, or even in the trade market, outside of so far dealing away all-star center or right fielder for a relief pitcher that, again, might be good, but didn't pitch in the playoffs in a meaningful way for the Mariners last season until they played a game that went a record long amount of innings, and then they threw him out there for one. They've sort of sat back and said, like you mentioned, they have all these paths. Well, where are the paths now then? Are you opening up new ideas? Are you going to be more creative? Because it just doesn't seem like they're... I don't see the path forward with the starting pitching where you're going to feel comfortable about it going into next season. I just don't. I do not see the scenario right now where it looks improved. Because right now, I feel as though the best case scenario is a pure run it back and bringing back Ross Stripling. And I'm a Ross Stripling guy. I thought that it went from he's underrated to he's a little bit overrated throughout the season. But that right now, you propose that to Blue Jays fans. Hey, you can bring back another lottery ticket in the Kikuchi Mitch White mold and Ross Stripling. And people would say, yeah, I guess I sign up for that. Because it sure is better than bringing in Noah Syndergaard or who's the name you
Drew
mentioned?
Smiley.
Drew Smiley. Yeah, no, not interested. The outfield, I still believe, is easier to put piece together. If you miss out on Nimmo, I still think that you can trade for outfielders too. And that is that we'll be surprised by potentially some name that ends up coming to Toronto in a trade. But again, they don't have a ton of trade assets. The place where they have the most surplus, there at least is not a ton of noise about the demand. I'll ask Morosi about it later. Maybe I'm a little off on that. Maybe that's just the window we're in right now.
Morosi was big on Jansen Newbar.
Yeah.
He thought that was the path for St. Louis and for Toronto.
And then the other part of it is all the other really good teams in baseball, the teams that are in their competitive win now cycles, are splashing around cash. They're all making moves. And some of them are to retain, like the Yankees just trying to keep Aaron Judge, but others are trying to take a step. And so far, the Toronto Blue Jays, a team that right now, if you would have said to everybody, hey, going into the 2023 season, what were the Blue Jays going to be doing? You would have anticipated that it was going to be remaining aggressive. Anyway, let's take a quick break and let's come back. And I want to talk about urgency when it comes to decision-making and whether it's growing with the Toronto Raptors. Blake Murphy in studio. Next.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
All right, so Blake Murphy in studio. Didn't plan on... I never thought we weren't going to talk a little Blue Jays. I just thought it would be a little bit at the end. Hmm. And the question was just going to be, hey, how are you feeling about the Blue Jays offseason? I didn't think, again, their only move would be trading away their all-star center fielder. I don't know why I keep saying center fielder. I didn't think it would be trade Teoscar Hernandez and everyone go, give them time, give them the benefit of the doubt, and then nothing happens for a while. Usually this is the take of an idiot, because if you have an immediate take in baseball, it almost always comes back to look stupid. May that be the case. May that be the case. So, Raptors win against what's the Lakers G League team called?
They were the South Bay Lakers at one point.
Okay, well... Yeah,
South Bay Lakers.
Okay, nice. Well,
these teams change names a lot, and they do and locations.
The Lakers. I sat down yesterday for what I thought was going to be a really fun night of NBA action.
Wrong.
Yeah, Celtics Suns. My poor Suns. That was Jobo. You're a fan of the aesthetics. What does Zach Lowe call them? He does the rankings with his league pass, where he adds the aesthetic to it. That last night. Those purple Suns jerseys versus those white Celtics jerseys. That's honestly about as good of a look as you can have in pro sports.
I think the only thing that would beat it is classic Lakers against classic Celtics.
Yeah, no, but that's why that's the mind trick that your brain is playing on you is that you see the Suns
nostalgia.
And you go, oh, this looks right. And then you remind it's because the other purple team.
You know what it is? It's because in all the Lakers highlights and VHS and stuff that we used to watch, it's like everyone always stomped the Suns on the way to what the video was about.
Yeah.
So we also get the Suns.
The Suns are always the losing team.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, they were around. Anyway, that game sucked, except for, both games sucked. It's good for Raptors fans. I did think about LeBron and how he always talked about no load management. And here he is on a easy schedule loss, knowing, and he just sits. Mm-hmm. And all the Lakers fans that paid big money. Obviously, you've been to Lakers Raptors games, but have you ever been to a Lakers Raptors game, Joe? It's a lot of Lakers fans. Always. It's a ton of Lakers fans. Mm-hmm. And so people would have bought those tickets early, anticipating seeing LeBron. And yeah.
They probably got them as soon as the schedule came out.
That's a tough one. We don't even talk about that in the NBA anymore. It's just load management is so part of the culture that the conversation about guys playing in these games and fans missing out on the ticket prices is just, it's completely gone anyway.
It does. It sucks, especially with the Lakers, though. Like LeBron, since he went west, and sure, everyone's had a lot of time to see LeBron, but maybe you were too young or didn't have the money or you want to see him again. It's entirely possible he's played his last game in Toronto.
If
he's going to continue to load manage on East Coast trips and stuff. Anthony Davis hasn't played in Toronto in years.
Mm-hmm.
He just always misses that game back to his New Orleans days. So that's a weird one too. There's a huge fan component. I don't know how you legislate around it. Like we've already stretched.
I don't even think a game like that though is fun for a fan to go to. Maybe this is wrong. So you can reach out to me if you think that is fun, but if you're going to a game, you want to have some competitive feel to it. No.
Well, yeah, and like this is, if you are a season ticket holder or you got tickets for this game because you just wanted to go to a Raptors game, that could have been fun. A low defense, high scoring, no stress win is a cool viewing experience. But if you got those tickets at the start of the season thinking, oh, I got Lakers tickets, I got LeBron and Anthony Davis tickets, no.
No, that was not a fun game. In fact, I put it on in the second half and my buddy went, can we just watch the Flames Wild game? And I went, we sure can. We sure can, pal. We watched Warriors and Jazz, which was actually a good game.
Tell you what you missed in the second half. Nothing you didn't see in the first half.
No, I didn't feel that way. Anyway, so I have a couple of things for you today. You're a big numbers guy. So I want to ask you first, before we get into kind of big picture stuff, just some numbers that matter and don't, because this will help shape the framework, I think, of the bigger question. So number that matters or don't, Fred VanVleet, his field goal percentage, his three-point percentage has been brought up quite a bit lately. The three-point shooting since the All-Star break last year has been bad, so I don't really love the idea of putting this is just a this-season thing. It was very clearly a last-season thing, too, but this was one that stuck out to me even a little bit more. At the rim last year, do you know what Fred was?
He was above 60%. That was a huge part of him improving and getting to an all-star status.
65% at the rim last season.
After a career of being like a 53, 54, 55 guy.
Yeah.
It's a huge jump.
This season, 48%. And the field goal attempts like per game in that area are quite down. So you combine that with the shooting. Blake Murphy, is this a number that matters?
Yeah, it does. I'm less concerned about the three-point shooting rounding out. I think he'll get there. I think there's just way too much track record of this guy knowing his mechanics and his jump shot super well. Like, even this stretch right now, I know this doesn't make it feel better, but this is the worst shooting stretch of his career in the regular season. What that tells you is that, yeah, he's going through it, but he almost always figures this out. Like, he usually bounces back after a stretch like this. So, and he did it last year too. He had that really bad stretch post All-Star break and then got hot heading into the playoffs and then got hurt again. The finishing is one that is troubling to me, because that's one where I think if something was off physically, I think that's where it would materialize first, in how well he's getting to the rim and how well he's finishing there. And yeah, nights like last night, there's that fancy little scoop bucket, which I think I texted you. That's like the closest VanVleet's going to get to a dunk highlight in his career. Of just,
I think
like
we both texted each other at the same
breaking
time.
Breaking a defender down and then just scooping it right at the front of the rim. But no, he was a very good complimentary player for a couple years without that finishing because of the threes and the three-point volume and the defense. And then what made him an all-star last year was suddenly he was also a threat at the rim, and that opens up things like your mid-range pull-up against, like we saw it against Boston. He missed a bunch of those pull-up mid-range jumpers against Blake Griffin dropping back. That's a weapon that he needs to have, and that only opens up really those things feed into each other if you're finishing at the rim and what opens up for you as a jump shooter. So the finishing is more of a concern to me. I would imagine he ends the season, what's he at right now, 33.3% on threes?
Yeah.
I'd imagine he, even with this sample kind of dragging him down, I'd imagine he finishes the season over 36, because he'll have a hot streak and then he'll normalize or whatever. The finishing, though, like that is the thing that determines whether this guy is a borderline all-star or a really, really good complimentary piece.
Number that matters or doesn't. Gary Trent Jr.
Doesn't matter.
Averaging more points per game coming off the bench on the exact same usage percentage, which is pretty, like, that really stuck out to me, that the usage rate is the exact same.
This is what I've been, and I've never had the conversation with Gary Trent, but when people are like stress about a guy moving to the bench, it's like, no, you can still get your touches and you can still get your points, and it's probably going to be easier because you can commandeer the ball more in a bench offense and you're playing against worse defenders.
So you go across the board, and granted, I cherry picked this one. I'm just going to admit a little bit because it's six games coming off the bench so far this season. Yeah, I know, but he's shooting almost 40% from three as a reserve versus 30% as a starter. His true shooting percentage obviously way up. His offensive rating up. I don't know how much I always weigh into individual offensive or defensive rating, but it is worth just noting that, yeah, getting the ball the same amount, he has been a far more efficient player despite being surrounded by less good players.
Shocker. It's almost like for 2.5 years we've been having the same conversation about what the best deployment of Gary Trent is and why he is like lab built to be your microwave guy off the bench. And again, the Raptors run an 8-man rotation these last few games. Like, since Gary Trent came off the bench, they've had a tight rotation. So it's not like he's playing with, you know, Ron Harper Jr. out there. He's playing with Boucher and Thad and usually two of the starters. So he still has guys who can get him the ball in his spots. I don't think the 3-point percentage has anything to do with him coming off the bench. I think that's just a good shooter's eventually going to shoot well. But
Really struggled from the floor this season, and now he's shooting it a little bit better.
Yeah, so but I do think that there is something to, you're playing against slightly lesser defenders. Mm-hmm. You can be a little more confident that to look for yours and
you mean
not
he
worry.
He can just be his selfish self without worrying about it. It's translation.
Yes, we can translate it that way. Because you know what stat's not up since he moved to the bench? His assists.
Yeah, no, that's never going to change.
That is what it is. But no, like, his minutes have barely dipped. His scoring's up. And this is, you know, I know there's an element of contract stuff with Gary Trent that you have to navigate sensitively. But he's been a better version of Gary Trent off the bench. And that has, it would be one thing if it looked like a blip because it didn't really make sense on paper, but it's made sense on paper since the moment they got him for him to be this guy for them. So yeah, that's, that matters.
So number that matters. This is a stat that I don't think is a perfect one, but when it dips to a certain area, I start to pay attention. And when it is a little bit layered year over year, the Raptors being 28th in true shooting percentage and 27th over the course of an entire season a year ago. Number that matters or number that doesn't?
Absolutely matters. It tells you a lot. It tells you this team's a little light on three-point shooting. It tells you that this team is a little light on guys who can create for themselves to get to the free throw line. Pascal Siakam has played unquestionably like an all-NBA guy. Even still, the Raptors have struggled a lot in the half court. And Siakam has one of the bigger, like, on-off impacts on half-court offense in the entire league.
Yeah, because guess what? He's by far the Raptors' best player, and he is one of the best, I think, 15 guys in the NBA.
Yeah, and they're dead last in half-court offense.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that matters because it's not something new. It's not something that we didn't expect. It's kind of par for the course. What we teed up this year, similar to how we teed up last year, where it's, it's for this team to be the best version of themselves, they got to be these monsters in transition by volume and efficiency, and you have to be a top flight defense. And if you can be a top transition team and a top 5 to top 8 defense, you don't need your half court offense to be that great. You need it to be better than dead last, though.
I think that's fair. So when we did our season preview, you and I, what did we talk about? Is this team going to be able to put enough pressure on the rim, and can they shoot well enough? There were some preseason games, and I know it's preseason, but they were shooting so poorly that you went, okay, that's something. And I don't want to hear about Otto Porter Jr. being hurt, okay? Because Otto Porter Jr.'s entire career has been hurt, and if you're trying to sell fans on the reason your shooting is bad is because Otto Porter Jr. hasn't been healthy, or because some of you haven't had your complement of stars for the entire season, like, this is asinine discussions.
Here's a lesson for you, kids.
Yeah.
Don't play through bad hip injuries if you want to be healthy later in your career. This basically ended Isaiah Thomas, Boston Celtics Isaiah Thomas. Otto Porter Jr., that 1 year against the Raptors, he could, like, barely stand up at shoot-arounds, and they were tasking him with guarding DeMar DeRozan for entire games.
He was an absolute luxury piece, okay? He was just an add-on item.
And he costs, like, nothing. Like, in the grand scheme of things, there was almost no opportunity cost either because, like, what are you doing with a chunk of your mid-level otherwise?
My point is not about did they screw up the Otto Porter signing. My point is simply
I just don't want all those kids out there playing through hip injuries, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, here's the thing.
That's a common injury for kids, is hip.
Six of their top seven three-point shooters by volume are shooting below 34% on threes.
Yeah, that number matters. Okay, so this is then going to bring me into the big picture question because all of those things relate to it to me because those are the moves that you make in the immediate future. To me, this has been the story of the season. You were fine running this group back and not having to make a pressure trade. Thank God they didn't make some type of a move that involved, although Shaedon Sharpe does have some like real, like if you take a look at him, there's could be a real thing there. Like we could be having Shaedon Sharpe talks very, very shortly. Anyway, I'm glad that the Raptors didn't trade OG Anunoby because there was a little bit of buzz about that. To me, this is what's becoming clear. We're starting to get a big picture sense of this team, and especially given the way that they've performed lately against some of the better teams in the NBA. There were two blowouts, and then the Celtics loss I thought was especially troubling given Boston was on a back-to-back. They were missing three key players. The Raptors were sitting there needing to make a statement. And, yeah, Boston is the team that they're going to have to measure themselves against.
And it was right there.
It was right there, and they were not able to do it. They're also a team that is kind of geared to be able to slow down Jason Tatum, and it was just a reminder that, hey, the Raptors might be an awesome defensive team with potentially defensive player of the year, but you know what matters in the NBA still? Scoring. Mm-hmm. It's about scoring. And the Raptors cannot score well enough to compete at the highest levels. To me, that you've got a core of OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, and Scottie Barnes, but the idea of merging the timelines... This season for Scottie has been a reminder of how difficult that is. Also playing Jason Tatum was a reminder of, you know how many years he's been in the NBA? Do you guys remember the finals last year when he burnt out? Do you remember that he's coming back now and showing MVP form? Yes. Is it a reminder that you don't give up on young pieces and trade people too proactive? Or what is it? That you're not a prisoner of the moment and that you don't just go, oh, Jaylen Brown, you've got two guys. But those two were on the same track and they were on the same timeline. They were both very young. And now that's paying dividends. What the Raptors have is not the same thing. So I guess...
They also both, it's worth pointing out, like Pascal, and I've maintained this for a while, that Pascal Siakam's development kind of broke everyone in Toronto with like what a normal development looks like. Jason Tatum as a sophomore, Celtics fans were... having meltdowns of like, why hasn't this guy improved? He's gone the other way as a three-point shooter. He hasn't improved as a passer. That was his sophomore year. I think it was Jaylen Brown's third year where it was the same kind of thing. Like,
it's taken him 6 years in the league.
Yeah, and Jaylen Brown, even last year in the playoffs, it was, well, he can't really, you know, dribble that effectively. He was a turnover machine when teams took Tatum out of the game. And yeah, he's in year seven. It takes a lot of time. And even like... Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet did not become the versions of themselves. I mean, Pascal is still climbing even higher, so I don't know. Again, he breaks every player development benchmark that we have. It doesn't, nothing about his ascension makes sense, but we're still talking about a guy who, it was his fifth year in the league when he cracked All-Star and All-NBA. And this is his seventh year in the league. And Scottie Barnes could be the Rookie of the Year. He could be, have an unbelievable sophomore season. He could take another step forward next year, but generally, yeah, if you're talking about a guy as a 1-2 piece, it takes some time.
I don't even really want to have the Scottie conversation outside of merging the timelines, just because that was, again, a reminder of Scottie Barnes in his sixth season, his fifth season, maybe his fourth season is where you're going to really start to judge who he is and what he can be.
The better conversation is maybe, is he a timeline bridge and not, you don't merge the timelines, but he's your pivot to stay competitive as you come out of the Pascal
Fred era. This is where I'm going with it. They are in a tough spot because I mentioned Siakam is one of, to me, the best 15 players in the NBA. He is brilliant. Watching him every game is awesome. When he comes off the floor, you go, oof. If he gets hurt, you go, oof. OG has taken some real strides this year. I'm like proud of OG's aggression, genuinely, like a father watching a son where he does some things and it's clunky at times because he's just so big and strong and there are moves where he tries to get into like his mid-range game and you go, oh, that's ugly, but it rattles in sometimes, you know, but the three-point shooting is there and the defense is clearly there. He looks like a player that's completely engaged. I don't see a scenario that does not involve a super duper star coming back to Toronto where it would ever make sense trading OG Anunoby. To me, those three guys,
I'm proud of you, by the way,
those three guys are the core to me. The question is, what do you do with the two guys who can get out of their contracts this year with Fred VanVleet and Gary Trent Jr.? Because if we're agreeing that there is some urgency when it comes to timelines, I think that what is becoming clear is you cannot continue to just run this back. You can't just pay Gary Trent Jr. and Fred VanVleet and hope that the plan moving forward is, well, Scotty Barnes continues to grow and develop and that in year three or year four, he turns into a megastar and all of a sudden it all works and comes together. There are times where the Raptors can flash that, right? And that's why I understand any fan that's a little upset even hearing this, because you've seen it. You've seen the Raptors look great with this group and beat good teams and look like, holy crap, where do they rate in the NBA amongst the league's best team when all their guys are clicking? The problem is that they haven't been able to kind of hit on enough depth. They don't have enough scoring, and there isn't enough consistency in that to be able to withstand even tiny slumps for some of their good players.
We also had kind of baked in some Precious Achiuwa growth into they could run it back and be better. And whether by performance or injury, that hasn't been a part of the equation either. And he's not enough that you totally rethink this, but it's another factor that it's another piece of evidence that like the run it back approach requires a lot to go in your direction.
So this is my weird spin on Project 6ix9ine is it's actually worked pretty well, but they can't shoot enough. And what they need to do is decide whether or not they should move the two guys who are not 6'9" and who can shoot.
Yeah. You know, where if you could find 6'9" guys who could shoot, mm-hmm. you know where you'd find them? Mm-hmm. In the lottery with a max contract. That's the type of spot you end up in if you can shoot really well at 6'9". I get what you're saying. It's a bit ironic to be like, these two guys are novel on this roster and they have the skills that you need the most. But they are the guys who you have to make a decision on the soonest. And I don't think this stretch has changed, you know, how I feel about Fred VanVleet's future. Like, maybe it has for me. It makes his, you know, quote unquote bet on himself this time around to not sign that, you know, what was his max extension, not a max extension, but the most he could sign this past offseason.
Do you think he had over $100 million on the table?
So
he did, right? So he turned that down.
Yeah.
That could absolutely.
Because like it's not really much of a raise.
No, he makes what, 87?
Yeah, and like he projects to make 22.8 next year. So if you hand him a contract that starts at like 24 and escalates, like he's probably like, what the heck? Like,
yeah, but I've heard people say that maybe Fred opts into his deal because he doesn't. I just don't see that happening for a guy who is sub 6 feet tall who hasn't been able to stay healthy.
And honestly, if he does that, great.
Yeah.
Like if you're the Raptors and you get another year to decide on it, or you just like, even if Fred says to you, and this would never happen, but hey, I'm picking up my option and I'm out of here next year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm picking up my option because I want to enter a different free agent market with the new TV money, or because I'll have an extra year of service time, whatever. 1 year of, like, if you could sign even this version of Fred VanVleet, 1 year, $23 million,
no,
you're fine with
no
that.
Brainer.
Yeah.
No, here's the
Gary
thing.
Trent one. So this, I'm just saying that.
Can I just pause on Fred for 1 second? I don't want to, this is an absolutely two things can be true thing. Yeah. Fred VanVleet is still a good player. Mm-hmm. I don't want to confuse his slump with me making a case of, you got to get rid of this guy because he's falling apart and he's terrible. No, I believe that Fred is going to be a good and useful player for the Raptors over the next couple of years? Yes, absolutely I do. What I'm saying is, I don't think that the Raptors can tender him the type of contract that's both going to make him happy and allow for the team to improve. Mm-hmm. You and I last year, this is a completely different scale of player that we're discussing here. We talked about the Raptors' need to take the Goran Dragic contract and turn it into something of value for this team moving forward. And we can quibble with that result all we want. They did what they could with it ultimately in the end. I think that they tried some other team things, including the Talen Horton-Tucker trade, which, whatever, maybe you're a little bit happier with Talen Horton-Tucker than you are Thad Young. I don't know. Based on, I guess, the timeline that I'm going for, you'd probably be happier with Talen Horton-Tucker.
Yeah. Although Thad Young some nights is their only good player.
Dude, it's so funny watching Thad play so well some nights and then not get minutes, and you go, what is happening here? Like, how is he not? Anyway.
Also, Talen Horton-Tucker, another guy that, like, just developmentally just plateau.
He's somehow regressing in Utah.
I
don't know. I think that the Raptors, the thing I'm coming around more on is, to me, there actually is a path where you can re-sign Gary Trent in that reserve role if he's willing to buy into that. But
he's willing to buy into that if you give him the Tyler Herro money.
Yeah. Sure, and that might be an issue.
Yeah.
But to me, they've got to figure out a way to parlay Fred into something else. And
I feel the opposite, really, okay. Where I think Fred has enough equity built up and there are enough paths to finding something workable over the next year and a half with him, that whether that's an extension or you trade him down the line or sign and trade or whatever, I think those possibilities, there are many more of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm more comfortable with them because I think Fred's floor, even if things go poorly, is still pretty high. Gary Trent Jr. is a bigger decision because I'm not sure you know yet, and you should know by now, but I'm not sure we do know what his actual value is. Like, and I don't mean this in terms of...
A lot. It's over $100 million as well.
Right, but is it over $100 million to a team that will have to give Pascal Siakam another Supermax and OG's coming up for another contract? And this is the thing, is like, Gary Trent to me is the piece that locks in run it back into the next couple years, because yeah, you could turn around and trade him after a certain amount of time. But he is the guy who is going to get, like, his salary is going to look the most eye popping with the cap going up. To like, you know, we don't report these things in terms of percentage of the cap. It might not be that crazy, but
sure.
the actual number is going to be eye popping. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know that if they're committed to Vision 6-9, if they are committed to this brand of building, and like Gary Trent would get you back something. So I think Gary Trent locks you in to this path more than Fred VanVleet does. I also think it's just much likelier Gary Trent Jr. opts out with the intention of going elsewhere, where Fred might opt out and you still have, you know, the best shot in the room.
Here's if the question is, do I think Gary Trent Jr. or Fred VanVleet makes you a better basketball team? That answer is very clear.
Right. But does Gary Trent at $100 million make you a better basketball team than what you could do with that flexibility otherwise?
Here's the things in Gary Trent Jr.'s favor, though. You're always going to need microwave scores like that off the bench. He absolutely fits a big-time team need.
Mm-hmm.
If you can slot him in the right position, he also fits the timeline a little bit better, where he's 24 years old. There's less risk of the player running down, becoming hurt, just aging poorly like Fred potentially could. Just, we've seen this with smaller guards before. Mm-hmm. They can age more rapidly than we sometimes anticipate.
Guys who play really hard on defense, there are more things that can happen, right?
Yep.
To bang you up and wear you down.
And that's actually been the thing I think a little lost in Fred's poor play lately, is that his defense is still great and the hands are as active as ever, and I still really enjoy watching him on this end. I think the biggest point, though, for me is Fred can net you back more. I'm not sure if you're telling me today that Gary Trent Jr.'s trade market is one that's valuable and that other teams would highly covet, and you could turn his contract into something. Like, I'm open to the idea of flexibility. This isn't a take of Hot Take Radio where I'm trying to be like, they have to trade Fred, not Gary. Like, there are a lot of different scenarios that this team can pursue. To me, again, the ideal situation is probably passed them by, but it's the trade that I kicked around a little bit yesterday, which is, hey, if they could do the Russell Westbrook trade, take on Russ's money and get the two first round picks, that's the perfect one, because again, it allows you to buy flexibility with your timelines, where you can say a star becomes available. Well, now you have all your own picks plus a couple of Lakers picks. And I don't know, they don't really have any young, valuable players. Like, I don't want them to trade Delano, but his value anyways is not, like, I always love when people, you know, tweet me with a fake Malachi Flynn trade, and I go, what do you think Malachi's value is around his former first round pick?
It's the old HBAP joke. Yeah. It's like Nets fans traded the Humphreys, Brooks, and a pick. HBAP was like a thing on NBA Twitter for a long time.
I still think, though, that there might come a point in time where the Lakers would consider a trade like that, because if you think about it, they can get out of those deals. They can potentially have Fred. That's a really good scenario for him to say, actually, I might opt in and explore free agency a year later because I'm playing with LeBron. I'm playing in ideal circumstances in LA. Gary Trent Jr. fits them perfectly. If you talk about what the Lakers need right now, it's a point guard. They need a steady point guard that can come in there and be able to shoot. They need more shooting. Those two guys provide that. I just don't think Russ is as detrimental to them, even though he will become playoff time and they will regret it if they decide to keep him. It seems like they don't want to give up those first round picks the way they do. And you're not doing it for just one. You're doing it for two. You're doing it for both of those future Laker picks that could have supreme value. But again, if you're the Raptors, the reason why I like a trade like this is I feel as though they're a team that needs to take a step back to take a step forward. And
this is kind of the conundrum you run into when you exist as a good team constantly, right? And the kind of story of the championship was that the front office was okay stomaching continuing to be pretty good because they felt that was your best path to being great.
Yep.
That requires something to present itself that takes you to great. And I think maybe we thought for a while that that was just Pascal taking the leap to superstar, but he's there. And, yep. And you see, it doesn't, you know, it's not enough yet to
and
drag
OG
everyone.
Is much better.
Yeah.
OG is a version of the scorer that everyone hoped that he would become. Yeah. Like, let's be honest, OG's development as a scorer is going to take a what increase from what it is right now over the next couple of seasons. This is, to me, pretty ideal for OG Anunoby.
Yeah, I think
like,
so.
This is pretty much the ceiling of what he is as a player. And that's
he's a 20-point-a-game guy while being defensive player of the year.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying that to go, oh, it's not, I'm saying it's still not enough having your two guys at the top of the pile being their best versions of themselves. And that Scotty Barnes, we have to just be a little realistic and not put all the pressure of the Raptors trying to win a championship on the shoulders of what, Scotty? Is he still 21? He's 20?
Yeah,
like, he's 21 or 20. You can't have all the pressure in the world on this guy to be like, hey, you got to take a step, you got to take a step, you got to take a step, you got to be a guy in order for this team to win. If we're looking at timelines and merging and fits and all these different things, Fred clearly fits every team. That's part of who he is as a player. But that's also what makes him attractive in the trade market going down this season. And to me, that what they cannot afford to do is just run this back. The patient approach that Masai Ujiri has taken has been fine, but to me, there is a sense of urgency right now with the Toronto Raptors where, like, they're going to have to start to make some decisions on some things moving forward here because, yeah, they can't afford to let Gary Trent Jr. walk for nothing. They certainly can't afford to have that happen with Fred VanVleet. That's an absolute nightmare. And they frankly don't have enough depth with prospects. They don't have other teams' picks. There doesn't seem, even they were talking, I was reading about the Poeltl buzz yesterday and I went, for what? Like, what is that trade? Do you have to include, a pick for...
Yeah.
And I'm saying, no, what does that turn the Raptors into? What does Jakob Poeltl change for the Raptors? I think they need a better presence at the rim too. Someone who can score around there. You've seen how valuable Koloko even is to them, even though he just doesn't have the strength to finish. I just don't see it happening with some minor moves around the fringes for this team right now.
This is why this next month is so important. And it's, you know, all 82 games count the same in the standings, but this next month or so is going to determine what path they take over those couple weeks leading into the trade deadline. If they go on a run here and suddenly Fred looks like himself and Gary's shooting continues on like this and they look like a team that's maybe one addition away from winning a playoff series, that's very different than if a month from now they're still hanging around 500 and all their marquee wins are against the Orlando Magic or like Austin Reeves starting for the Lakers.
Buddy, January 5th, they play the Kings, who can score and who are actually decent.
Yeah, they're fun.
The beam team.
The Kings are very fun. They play the Kings, then they play the Nets, who have had the Raptors' number this season. They play the Warriors, who have not been the Warriors this year by any stretch of the imagination, but still, I think that's a good team. Then they play the Sixers, and then they have a game against the Cavs, and then Kawhi comes back to Toronto. Oh. Then John Morant is here, and then the Suns December 30th, and then the Bucks are January 4th. So that, to me, is 9 games. Like, and there's other games sprinkled in between there, but they're honestly, I don't care about the Raptors beating up on bad teams anymore. It's just, it's very clear that they're much better. And
yeah, last night we learned nothing. Yeah,
nothing, absolutely nothing. And I don't think we're going to learn anything from the Raptors playing the Magic these next couple of games either. Like, I'm sorry, but
also, what did they do to our Magic? We were big Magic guys at the start, and now they're getting worse game by game.
No, but what's weird about the Magic is that they've hit on seemingly Bol Bol. Bol Bol is one of the most entertaining guys. I saw a tweet that was perfect. They said the Magic should be in the Wembanyama sweepstakes. And they said, no, we have Wembanyama at home. And it's a picture of Bol Bol. I was like, yeah, that's perfect. Anyway, I love Bol Bol. Obviously I'm a huge Paolo guy.
He's electric.
I'm a huge, huge, huge fan. It's a shame Jalen Suggs just hasn't been able to string health and consistency together for them because it just feels like he's a real piece they could miss. But yeah, where they're at right now in their competitive cycle, the Raptors beating the brakes off of them in back-to-back games is not teaching me much. I'm saying those 9 games bringing you to January, as you start to inch a little bit closer, that should be the time where they're making some determinations and saying, okay, what needs to change? And I just think that maybe they don't, I'm never going to say they need to do something, right? I'm never going to say they need to trade Fred VanVleet. But what I would say is, if you come out of the stretch, if a month from now this team looks pretty similar, here's what needs to happen. It needs to be on the table. You need to be at least exploring it with some other teams and taking a look at what your options could be. Blake, you're on later today on Fan Drive. I appreciate you coming in today. Hopefully next time we do this soon, next time we do this, it's a little bit more, yeah, the Jays have signed players and the Raptors hit shots.
Yeah. I would love to talk about transactions and made field goals.
Yeah, that would be good.
Instead of the lack of transactions.
Blake Murphy, quick break. We'll come back. John Morosi, next. All right, thanks to Blake for coming in. I'm just going to wrap up a couple of quick thoughts from earlier in the show before we get to John Morosi and maybe give you our picks for tonight's game. I'm a big Fred VanVleet fan. I don't bring up the idea of trading him lightly. Just to me, this is the thing. With the age and with the contract, it's something that I think would be very valuable around the league. There are a lot of teams that probably really want to have some help. And it'd be very interesting to see like what the market for Fred would be. Whereas to me, the opportunity to hand Gary Trent over $100 million doesn't seem as an attractive an idea. And Trent has been good in the playoffs before. And granted, one of them was like the bubble where he was really a bubble star. And you saw it though last year against the Sixers where he could create his own shot. He's a half court scorer. To me, he's a younger player who, given the right role, I could see him fitting into this Raptors group. I think Fred fits that too. It's just, again, how do you improve the team? How do you improve the team? Because I don't see how them having the 20th pick in the NBA draft and bringing in those kind of players or bringing in undrafted free agents that they've been able to hit on throughout the Masai Ujiri's tenure is going to somehow work out as all of a sudden you need to give raises to, over the next 2 years, they need to give raises to their four core veteran players. So where does the decision-making come down? Eventually, you're going to have to make some tough ones on some of those players. But it might end up being easier to find a point guard at some point through the trade market using added first-round picks than it might be going out there and getting another guy who is a scorer of the ilk of Gary Trent Jr., who's at that age. Again, he's about to turn 24 years old. OG, Trent, Scotty, that just feels a little bit more congruent with one certain timeline than it does with Fred. When do you think that the competitive cycle is going to end up happening for this team? I would argue it's going to be, potentially 3 seasons from now when Scotty Barnes and hits more of who he is in his prime. And then potentially hopefully that Siakam remains. I think that Siakam is going to age well. He's had some health stuff. Sure, who hasn't? But if you just look at the way that his game has evolved, his shooting has gotten way better. His mid-range game is awesome. His footwork has improved drastically. And like I talked about with Grange a couple of weeks ago, his athleticism is underrated to a degree. Because it's not the type of athleticism that is celebrated in the NBA, like the John Morants of the world or the Zions, the power and the speed. But he is just the speed and the sleek, and I just think Siakam's going to age well. I'm not as certain as about Fred. I'm just not. And so if we're talking about 3 years from now, Fred VanVleet on a big money contract, is that going to have the same attractiveness in order to move? Like, where is the pathway again to improving the team? Is it through the draft? It's not through free agency. They'll be capped out. They'll use a mid-level exception. You saw what that turns into in seasons like this one. It's Otto Porter Jr. So inactivity can end up biting you in the ass a little bit. I don't see guys like Chris Boucher having a ton of value in the trade market. That's not a big path to improvement. Packaging together kind of those middle-tier, bottom-tier players like Thad Young's not returning you anything. So feels like it's coming down to those two guys, unless you start getting into the OG conversation, which is sort of terrifying. But if you're doing the OG thing, it has to be in you're getting back a bona fide, like all NBA team type of player. Because 20 points a night with some of the best defense in the NBA, it's just not something that you trade. Not in this NBA. Not after a season where we saw a championship won by Andrew Wiggins, who was his team's most important defensive player, who was scoring 20 a night. Like, that's That's what you need in those matchups. That's what you need in those games. That's how you're going to end up beating the Celtics potentially down the line, is having guys who can defend that position. Now, the Blue Jays thought from earlier. I know that the Jays are a team that has spent and gotten players before. But they did set the market with Springer, and they did set the market with Gausman. And I guess my frustration here today is, maybe I deluded myself into thinking that this was just going to be a way of life for the Toronto Blue Jays until Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette needed to get paid. It seems like they're going to go up to the wire with both of those guys in terms of extensions. And the idea of, well, Alek Manoah needs to get paid at some point. Alek Manoah is my favorite player on the Jays. And he's my favorite Blue Jay in a very long time. I believe in his longevity as a pitcher. I think he's a horse. To me, he is going to have a very long and successful career, and he is going to get re-upped in Toronto, and he will get a big money contract. But planning your present around the future of potentially having to pay a starting pitcher who could, what if he needs Tommy John the year before he gets a contract extension? Then what? Just this, the idea that there are these fixed costs to the future is not a great way of looking at things. It's great to be prepared for the future, but what is it? You make plans and God laughs? Those things can happen. Things can change. What is certain is that right now the Toronto Blue Jays are one of the best 10 teams in baseball. They have two young star players. They've got two ace-ish type guys. I shouldn't even say ish. They're both ace pitchers at the very top. They've got two aces. After that, it's pretty thin. Unless Jose Barrios has a miraculous bounce back. Which in this sport, honestly, given all the data we have, yeah, it would seem less likely that that is the outcome, that it, that is the case. So I guess if the theme of today is when is your decision making forced to be urgent? When do you have to be urgent? Raptors have a little bit more time in terms of trying to be competitive and trying to be champions, but there is some urgency in terms of how you try to get there. The Blue Jays to me are urgent. This is a very special time for the franchise. It's a very unique time for the franchise. They're not always going to be able to dip in free agency and just rebuild their teams on the fly. They're not going to do what the Padres are doing or what the Dodgers have been doing. But again, look at what the Padres just did this offseason. They already had a guy in the postseason in Kim at short who everyone was raving about, who people were saying, hey, even when the cheater comes back, he's probably going to still be the shortstop. Perhaps part of this is hedging the bet. Maybe, actually, I didn't even have thought about this until this moment, but maybe part of this is that they might be entertaining a Tatis trade. Like, that they would be looking at something like that. Maybe he needs a fresh scenery or that there's something there, but anyway, that's just a random off-the-cuff thought. But they've got three guys who can play shortstop, and they're all studs. Did that prevent them from going out and paying Xander Bogaerts? No. They said, hey, there's a really good player in free agency and we can improve our team without taking anything away. They did both. They took a bunch of their trade assets. They moved in on Juan Soto. They were aggressive. And now they're using their free agency dollars to go after and improve their position at already one of strength. So that's just what I want to see the Blue Jays do. And right now there are too many holes to believe that this team is going to win a World Series. There are. Could some of them get patched up? Absolutely. But as of right now, they still need a power arm in the back end of the bullpen. That hasn't changed. We haven't even talked about that because there have been so many other things. They still need the power arm at the back end of the bullpen, okay? They need at least two starters. And you'd love for it to be somebody who has the ceiling of a number three in case things fall off with Barrios. They need two outfielders. And they don't need to make a catcher trade, but yeah. Difficult to envision how they're going to work those three guys in. And this isn't next year for Gabriel Moreno. It's harder to keep him in Buffalo, harder to not have him getting catching reps as he enters his standing as a real Major League Baseball player, as he continues to develop and grow. So, yeah, I'd like to see a little bit more urgency. And again, maybe I talked myself into a fallacy. Maybe I got overly optimistic about what they could do. But as of right now, it still feels the same way that it did right after the Oscar Hernandez trade, which is there's a lot of eggs in the Brandon Nimmo basket. And then even once you get that done, what comes next? Where does some of the other money go? How attractive are some of the trade pieces you have? So forth and so on. Anyways, before Morosi, it's time for action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in on the action. Must be 19 plus. Must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. Okay, so tonight, Raiders, Rams. Apparently Baker might be the starter. Is that what the fellows are telling me?
Latest from Adam Schefter. The Rams want to see how John Wolford, who has a neck injury, is doing in warm-up tonight before they decide who starts at QB. It might be Baker in line to start if he's not healthy enough.
Okay, so here's what I will tell you based off of that. There might be a little bit of value on the Rams receivers in this prop parlay today. I this is a stupid guy idea, but they're so low. Have you looked at them? Van Jefferson is 36 and a half yards. Tyler Higbee, 30 and a half. It's kind of interesting. It's a short week. And who do you like more in a short week? The team that has some momentum behind them in the Raiders, or the team that just really gassed themselves against the Seahawks trying to get a big W for Bobby Wagner and who's just falling apart and their season is essentially done? I like the Raiders more and more in this game. I really do think that they're going to win. There might be a little bit of a tasty wager on the Raiders tonight. But either way, when I'm looking at this, I'm looking at these numbers.
This is the wildest receiving props I've seen in a while.
Yeah.
Like, it's Devontae Adams and then Mac Hollins and then a massive drop-off. And it's Van Jefferson at 36 and a half and everybody else below that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, most of these is like one play. One or two.
That's
big
what I'm
plays.
Saying. The Van Jefferson one is genuinely, can he get one
and
ball?
And if Baker ends up starting,
they
run
the ball.
Not going to be great, but like he'll sling it a couple times. I think he throws a pick tonight. But.
Well, they also, the Rams, if Baker starts tonight, might have 200 yards of total offense max.
if Baker starts, they're punting the game.
But this is the thing too. That Raiders team does not have a good defense. Like, that is
terrible.
Not an impressive defensive unit. And so, yeah, as weird as this is to say, kind of like Raiders overs tonight. The most hilarious one, by the way, is Foster Moreau, who's at 32 and a half. His numbers week over week are 32 yards. He's 32, 33, 33 in his last 3 weeks. You cannot bet that prop. You must avoid that prop. That is the most dead-on number sweat. You're hoping to break that by a yard, in case anybody's wondering. Anyway, so I was looking at props today. So anyway, I think that this is something that I'd rather wait on, but you're not going to be able to because this is what the segment is. But either way, I'm rolling with a Rams receiver prop parlay tonight and just saying, hey, some of these guys each get... Is Baker or Wolford? So if Wolford plays, he's going to finish with what? Around 200 passing yards, 170 to 200 passing yards. Okay, so how does that get distributed then? Because right now, again, you can get Van Jefferson at 36 and a half. You can get Tyler Higbee at 30 and a half. Where else? Ben Skoranek, 28 and a half. Like,
one of those guys is getting at least 50 or 60.
Yeah, this
at
is weird.
Least.
You know me. My normal philosophy is to go with the studs who you know are getting targets, right? So you could say, oh, well, Devontae Adams, they're going to move him around. Yeah. Why can't I remember the name of the corner? Jalen Ramsey. No, I couldn't get off of Jalen Adams. So it was like Devontae Adams was around. Anyways, he doesn't move around. He's not going to track him. Do I think that Devontae Adams probably gets 90 yards tonight? Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
But anyway, I like those two Rams guys, Higbee and Jefferson, 36 and a half, 30 and a half. I'll take either one of those if anybody likes it. What do you guys got? What were you looking at tonight?
I will say Josh Jacobs, even though he had that quad and calf thing, he is still listed to play. So just for anybody who is wondering, I actually like Cam Akers.
Okay.
Because the whole quarterback situation with
too
the
risky.
Rams, the Raiders defense is not good.
Mm-hmm.
Akers gets a lot of touches.
45 and a half. That's what you like, the rushing?
I do.
Okay. I don't mind it. Okay. So basically what we're saying is we think the Rams are going to get caved in. And they're going to lose this game, but we like their... This is the only reason I don't like the Akers over is because I could see them trailing in the game and them having to abandon the run and go to the passing
point.
Game. The other issue that I hate about our bet, just so everybody is very clear, This is a low confidence night. I don't know how you could, because we don't know who the quarterback is. It's a short week for two teams that are both quite bad. One team on the rise, whatever.
I just think Akers, I mean, 45 and a half. I could see him going over. I feel like if Baker starts, they're going to run the ball.
The other thing, too, is Max Crosby has been red hot lately. He's been really getting to the passer. So the idea that we even end up with Wolford or for a full game, Baker might be coming in at some point in this football game.
Chandler Jones had a massive game last
first
game
time
too.
Of the season, though. Yeah. I'm not leaning on that one too much. Anyway, that's my pick-ish tonight. Okay, that's my pick-ish is I like those two Rams guys, Higbee and Jefferson. It's just so low that I feel like they could hit the total. Jefferson especially with just one play. Who else are they going to throw the ball to? Somebody's going to have to get in there. If they're trailing, they're going to throw the ball. Maybe they get him mixed in on some bubble screens. It is still Sean McVay. I think he figures out a game plan to at least put up some yards against what has ultimately been a pretty disappointing defense. That was Time for Action, brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings app to get in on the action. Must be 19 plus. Must be in Ontario. Please play responsibly. John Morosi is patiently waiting on the line of MLB Network. Hey, John, how are we doing today? Busy man. You're a busy guy. All I see is you on MLB Network.
Good morning from San Diego. Yeah. We're wrapping up the winter meetings. The lobby is gone mostly quiet, but we are still here and looking for whatever stories we can share.
So the lobby is the Toronto Blue Jays offseason.
I would say so. Yeah. I would say so. The Jays, they have failed to deliver much excitement here so far. Now they may be able to pull off a significant move, and if they sign Brandon Nimmo in the next couple weeks, all shall be forgiven. But to your point, there is not a lot of momentum or excitement so far in what the Jays have been able to do.
Well, let's just start with Nimmo then, since you mentioned him, because I've been saying for a couple of shows now, it's starting to feel more and more like all the eggs are in the Nimmo basket in terms of turning this off season into something that you can say, all right, well, that was a good signing. After that, the drop off is pretty significant in terms of outfield pieces that they could end up signing, realistically anyway. I had BNS on yesterday. He thinks Nimmo is no longer that the Blue Jays are no longer a favorite for Nimmo. Do you feel the same way?
Well, I do think this, that the San Francisco Giants need to get somebody. And that somebody is likely to be either Correa or Nimmo. I have a hard time imagining the Giants not getting one of those two. And maybe they find a way to get both. It's going to be expensive either way. But I just think with Nimmo, the Jays are sort of battling upstream with respect to geographically, either he goes potentially back to the Mets where he's played or closer out west. Of course, he's a native of Wyoming, whether it's the Mariners or the Giants, there are teams that are closer to home for him that have a tremendous need for exactly what he provides. And so the Jays will likely put together a really compelling offer. They were in there and bidding for Justin Verlander, and which I thought was interesting, and fell short. They really wanted Andrew Heaney as well, but with Heaney, I think being closer to home and benefiting from the lack of state income tax in Texas was really important to him. And I think that is just emblematic of what the Jays are battling. You know, it used to be, if you take the big picture view here, The George Springer signing, there have been other times when the Jays have been very active in free agency. Ryu was certainly another example of that. But the reality is right now, JD, so many teams are starting to spend and spending aggressively. You've got the Padres spending as they have. The Phillies are spending. And this doesn't necessarily pertain that much directly to the Nimmo market, but my broad point here is that teams are willing to spend right now in a way that they have not been willing to spend for years. And so if in the case of Springer, the Jays were able to win that bidding, there were maybe at the end two or three teams that were in there strongly for Springer. Now it seems for elite players, it's four or five or six teams. Mm-hmm. And everybody seems to be really excited about spending. And so the more teams for whom that is true, the less appealing and less special the Jays offer becomes, because there is simply that much more competition for every player. I think there's on measure, just from talking to people, JD, in the industry, it seems that there's about one or two more serious bidders on every free agent who is of significance. And that is going to, in my view, significantly hamper the Jays' ability to land actually these guys they're talking about.
So did they misread this market then? Because they made that Teoscar trade early. They were sitting on their catchers, and they were kind of dangling the idea of one of them being out there, and now the place that most people thought was the most obvious trade partner for them, that doesn't appear to be an avenue anymore. Did the Blue Jays right. did they misread this?
I think that they may have, and I suppose we'll see at the end of the day how they're able to rectify this and potentially move Jansen for one thing that they need, whether it's an outfield bat or an arm. But right now, it's very possible that they have misread it. I'll say this, though, on their behalf, if they view keeping their catching depth as an acceptable outcome, which there's an argument to be made that they should do that, then there is a very strong left-handed, especially, free agent market for corner bats and DH types, and do they make one more run at Michael Brantley, who's still out there and available? Michael Conforto, after missing last season, is said to be healthy and is there. Andrew Benintendi is there. So they have some free agent options right now, and they have some fallback possibilities. That being said, there's no question, JD, that they're leverage in the catching trade market has dropped, because the Cardinals were one team that, you know, you and I talked about how wise it would have been to move Jansen for Lars Nootbaar. That would have been a really good fit, and the Cardinals just moved on, signed a player, and they're done. So I think that certainly has reduced the Jays' leverage, and that is something they're going to have to deal with and find a way to make the best of what is now a decidedly suboptimal situation, when not only do they have to find an outfield bat, from where I sit, they still have to add a starting pitcher and an impactful one. And so this is where I think Ross Atkins has to confront the reality that if he wants to, and by the way, I would fully endorse this strategy, if he wants to capitalize on what remains of the years of Vlad and Bo's prime, and not terribly expensive prime, because the clock is ticking on that, you need to be okay giving up a draft pick to sign Chris Bassett, Nate Eovaldi, et cetera. Carlos Rodon, I don't think he's going to come to Toronto, but that's my point. Is we cannot, at least I believe, we cannot be hearing from the Jays, well, we like Bassett, but we're worried about giving up the pick. That mode of thinking does not work when you are in your window. This is the Jays' window. And the tough part about this, JD, is the Jays' window, fearfully, if you're a Jays fan, might actually have been 2021 and 2022. Yeah. with the pitching, and it may, that the door may already be starting to close. And the only way to sustain this door, in my view, is if you have to give up a pick to sign Bassett or Eovaldi, do it. Because you're winning now. And look around you at the atmosphere in this sport right now. Cautious and you know, taking things in a very measured and objective way and logical way in a lot of ways is not really working right now. You have to sort of step out of your comfort zone to get the player. And if you don't, you're going to get used to finishing second and third for a free agent and probably second and third in your division.
Yeah. John, a lot of people were fist pumping listening to that. That was church. All of that is right. They should be thinking this way. This has been the point of frustration today for all of us that have been following this Jays team. And man, there's grumbling coming into the office today because, all right, they might be able to cobble together some outfielders. And you mentioned those bats, but nobody thought they were trading Teoscar Hernandez and then replacing him with Michael Brantley. Like, that was never the conversation in here. It was never, oh, maybe they could get Michael Conforto. No, that was not it. When we entered the offseason, it was never, oh, what do you think? Who do you think is the fifth starter for the Blue Jays going to be next year? You think it's going to be Mitch White, or do you think it's going to be Yusei Kikuchi? It was like, what? No, that was not supposed to be on the table. It was supposed to be going out right and getting multiple starters, somebody who was an impact. Not, hey, don't worry, it's 100% certainty that Jose Barrios is going to bounce back. It was, no, don't worry, you're going to go out there and get another starter that might even push him down the depth chart. And hey, don't worry, the Blue Jays have all these catchers and they might end up being able to move one of them, but they're going to be such attractive pieces. Everybody needs catching. I don't see that happening anymore. Like, I don't even understand truly what the value is of those guys. And frankly, you know, you've mentioned Danny Jansen's name a bunch. Is he the only guy that's available at this point? Has this kind of become a little bit more binary than it used to be, which is the Blue Jays are shopping Danny Jansen, not all three of their catchers?
Yeah, that's a great question. I do think that they are keeping in mind the possibility of trading any one of the three. I think the price is probably higher on the other two. But when you look at Jansen's market, he, to me, is the most logical one to trade. And to be clear, there are a lot of teams right now who need catching. The Tigers are one. The Guardians are another. We know that the Athletics have Sean Murphy. And I was told at one point in time that a dozen teams or so were involved in actively trying to get Murphy. So the market for teams that need shortstops is vast. I just think that the fact that we have not seen Jansen dealt is indicative of the reality that the industry prefers Sean Murphy, values him more highly, and will likely wait for Murphy to sign somewhere before for him to be dealt somewhere before Jansen is traded.
Boy, this is just...
I could tell you some different things, but that's the reality of where things stand.
Yeah, and, it's hard to hear, I think, for people who are excited about the potential of this offseason, who saw where the Jays were at this year and the way that they exited. And a lot of it was going to be, hey, these guys look close. They clearly need to upgrade the bullpen. And I don't think that they should be done there, quite frankly. To me, that they still need the high velo arm. They still need the big punch-out arm. They made that trade in the Teoscar Hernandez deal. That's a nice piece. I don't know how he ends up actually fitting in terms of the configuration of the bullpen, but ultimately, you still would love to see them get another arm. You'd like to see them get two starters. You would have liked to have had a potential where their catchers were extremely attractive and that they were setting a, you know, buyer's market in that area. You would have loved to have seen them add the bats that they wanted in the outfield. And it just feels like, yeah, they're striking out on everything, that this is the
right,
the offseason from hell for the Blue Jays.
Well, and I think, JD, unfortunately for the Jays, you're correct. And again, the what is driving all of this is the overall appetite of the industry to spend on free agents. And so that is why the Cardinals looked around and said, hey, I'm not wild about spending this amount of money on Wilson Contreras, but actually look around at your competition and people are spending, and we kind of have to keep up with what's going on in the industry right now, and you need to do that. And so that spending is in my view negatively impacting the Jays' leverage here, because it's making the free agent market more attainable for teams because they're willing to pay those prices. And on the flip side, the free agent market only works if players are really keen on playing for your team, and if you're willing to give up, in the right circumstances, a draft pick to sign the player. And so far, the teams that are having a cautious approach, I would describe that as the Jays, the Red Sox, who just lost Xander Bogaerts. Think about this, JD. I was just saying this on Hot Silver earlier today on MLB Network. Think about this. You got a player, homegrown Red Sox, two-time World Series champion, multiple-time All-Star, who just left your team because you were outbid by many, many millions of dollars by the San Diego Padres. Just think about that for a minute. If you had told someone that situation 10 years ago, that a franchise player for the Red Sox is going to be swept away by the San Diego Padres, and the Red Sox final offer would not even be close to what the Padres offered, this is an alternate baseball universe, and teams like the Jays and the Red Sox need to adapt, adjust, or they're going to be left behind.
Yeah. Oh, I've thought about it. I just thought about this, too. This is a little off topic with the Jays, and I do have one more on the Blue Jays, but since we're here, do you think the Bogart signing indicates anything about Tatis's future with that organization?
I think Tatis right now is going to be an outfielder. I mean, that to me is he's going to be a corner outfielder, and there may be those who disagree with me on that, but I see no other outcome here. I mean,
but they wouldn't trade him.
Right now is Machado, Bogaerts, Kim, and Cronenworth around the horn, and there's no room for Tatis. And by the way, I've said this before too. What leverage does Tatis say? Does he have to say, no, I don't want to move to the outfield? Really? You're suspended right now. What I can't keep your spot for you. You've been gone for 80 games. So to me, the scenario that's unfolding here is giving the Padres a clear out and a clear leg to stand on to say, listen, Fernando, you come back and here's your outfielder's glove and you're done playing shortstop, period. That's it. Bogaerts has no opt-outs. He is their shortstop. And I'm going to be really interested to see how Tatis responds and the degree of humility that he brings to spring training, because I think that is exactly what's going to be demanded of him under these circumstances.
So you don't think they trade him?
Nope, I don't. What I think is really interesting here, JD, is this is not a right now thing, I don't think, but we've talked about it before. Do at some point in time, do the Jays gauge the interest in the industry in Bo if they can't sign him, and see what, with all this shortstop conversation, if there is a team out there that says, wow, I'd like to have Swanson, but I don't want to pay $200 million, okay, then let's see. But for me, JD, the status quo for the Jays is not working. They have to either get aggressive in one way or aggressive in another, because this cautious sort of day-by-day measured approach is getting them third place, I believe, at the very best in 2023.
Yeah, I'm sure you're seeing it in your Twitter mentions if you ever read them. But yeah, the Jays being interested in a player, or the Jays having been in the conversation for a player, has run its course for fans here. Nobody cares anymore.
At some point, I will get back to reading mentions. I don't really do that.
Yeah. I don't think you ever should. Listen, your wife's a doctor. I don't think that she would have to give you advice of, hey, you know what is good for your mental health is reading the mentions.
It's for better or worse, JD. I've decided that for my own mental health in that way, it's a one-way conversation out.
Yep.
And that's kind of it.
It's a smart way to treat it. Okay, so last one then. They at least were offering pretty real money with Verlander, and they offered apparently more money for Heaney. And I don't know if it actually is more. When they say more money, you go, okay, yeah, sure, but what does that actually equate to after taxes, blah, 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 blah. Is there something right beyond just the market spending a ton of cash that's hurting the Blue Jays here?
I do think that just the reality is there are some players that want to play closer to home, and for now, still a large percentage of the players in the major leagues are from the U.S. And I think that there are times where that is just an impediment to the Jays signing big free agents. It's not anything that they can change or anything that's within their control. I think it's just part of how the market often plays itself out and the preferences of certain players. If the offer is within a certain percentage of an offer from your hometown team, you're probably going to take the hometown team's offer. And I think that is something the Jays are up against right now in a way that I think has become, I think, even more noticeable simply because of the number of teams that are willing to spend. And so I think the geography, the preference of playing closer to home, there are a number of teams in the U.S. that play in very tax-favorable locations, and that's going to be something that the Jays have to contend with probably even more so here in the months ahead.
So that stuff, I think you always anticipate being someone from Toronto and getting used to trying to be competitive in those markets, especially without a salary cap. The one I'm most curious about, if I could just give a bunch of players truth serum, is, hey, a big part of this was supposed to be that, and I always think this is overstated, right, John? Like, ultimately, it comes down to money. Most money, 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 money. That's what's really going to ultimately motivate a player to make a decision on coming to a place like Toronto. But the idea of, hey, you could come here and they're going to be competitive to try to win a World Series, and that would be more attractive to some guys when they're going, yeah, you know, like Heaney went to the Rangers. Granted, that's maybe more money, the lifestyle, right, whatever those things. But you would have thought that when push came to shove, if all things were equal, that the Jays would be a leg up on some of their competition, given that they are the Vladdy and Bo and Manoah team, right? That they are the Springer team, that they have these guys, that they're quote-unquote right there. Do you get the sense from around the industry maybe that a lot of players, maybe other teams, don't feel like the Jays are as close as we thought they were going to be? You mentioned a little bit, I guess, when you said maybe the window is shrinking.
Right. I think you're right. I think that the Jays are a good team. The industry views them as a good team. They are not a great team. I think if they're a great team, then you see players more drawn to them. I think they're regarded as being a good team. And especially remember this, and I'll leave you with this one. Without having signed Vlad and Bo at this point, there's a real question as to what the future looks like 2 and 3 years down the line. Mm.
John, I always love talking to you, and I appreciate the time today because you are very busy, extremely busy right now. But I feel worse. I'm grumpy now. I feel really grumpy. Normally you cheer me up and you always leave and I have like a 2 minute conversation after you leave of how John just brightens my day and I always feel like more energetic after speaking to you, and not today. Not today is full grump mode. Anyway, I appreciate it, man.
I got to tell you the truth.
Yeah. See you, John.
JD.
Thanks,
all the best, my friend.
Good
Happy
luck.
Holidays. Thanks so much.
You too. John
JD is the Bryce Harper of Toronto Sports Radio. I love it.
Yeah, that's I forgot about that job. Thank you. I forgot about that. See, I needed that little bit of pick-me-up. That's depressing as hell, and that's all the things that I've been trying to illustrate over these last couple of days. I don't think players look at the Jays and say they're World Series contenders. I think everybody thinks, like you just said, they're good. They'll be around the playoffs. They'll be competitive. But it's pretty clear when guys like Andrew Heaney say, yeah, Rangers, actually, I'm fine. And the Rangers are splashing around cash. Maybe they're better this year. Maybe they're there. But they were a long ways away last season. Didn't seem like when I watched Rangers games that, oh, if they could just get like a DeGrom and a Heaney, they'll win the World Series. You kind of did actually feel that way about the Blue Jays, that if they did get a DeGrom and a Heaney, that maybe they could win a World Series. Anyway, that so there's financial uncertainty about what they'll do with their young stars. Brutal. The guys that they have in trade pieces are not as attractive as we once thought they would be. Brutal. They don't have the cash that other teams have that are at the top tier, and there are more teams with cash. Brutal. Why am I supposed to pretend that this is okay? Why am I supposed to pretend that this is earlier? Whatever the hell. This is bad.
And there are other teams who have big money who need the pieces that the Blue Jays are looking at.
That are still out there. The final remaining pieces they're still competing with. And there, it's an uphill battle when it comes to geography, competitive window, and money.
And just going against a team cool. like the Giants.
Yeah. No, that's very cool. This is what I think is, it's great. It's totally fine. They didn't misread the market at all. That's the part that they should be blamed for. They made that Teoscar trade, and it was always about the next domino. Mm-hmm. Every article that was written about Teoscar Hernandez was about the money that he freed up. It was never... This is going to improve the team. This reliever, he's coming in here, and now that's better for you than Teoscar Hernandez. No, it was what is the domino? What is the subsequent move?
That was the lob.
And there was a lot of, hey, you should wrap your mind around potentially getting Nuke Bar. Nope. Now it is, you better hope for Brandon Nimmo, or else you might see Conforto, or you might see Michael Brantley, or you might see Joey Gallo. I'm actually kind of on the Joey Gallo thing, but I don't want to see him be an everyday guy. I want to see him be a bench depth piece. Anyway, quick break. We'll come back and hit on a couple of things that we missed, including another embarrassing moment for the UFC.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
So, JD, it was a tough week for the UFC. There's the whole gambling scandal earlier, and now on Twitter yesterday, everything blew up. Dana White and Patty Pimblett with some questionable comments about Ariel Helwani on Patty's podcast. Mm. Ariel responded with a whole, I would call it a rant, but it was a very justified rant. How did you see the whole situation? And, I mean, Ariel's response is bang on.
Yeah, so people will think that I'm biased because I'm friends with Ariel. But I genuinely, watching the way that Helwani handled that, if you're in this business, or you're just a big fan of this business, whatever... It's actually, there are moments where you watch someone work and go, ah, damn it. I could never, like, that is just, that's good.
Yeah.
That's just incredibly good work.
That's a Klay Thompson game six moment.
It's a humbling and truly a little bit inspiring seeing Ariel work that way. If you look at his career and what he's made of it, It's damn impressive, man. Mm-hmm. Again, he walked away from ESPN. Mm-hmm. Go find the list. To go do his own thing that has worked out and it's been unquestionable. And he did it for, yeah, reasons of integrity. So, for whatever reason, I don't think it's actually whatever reason. The UFC doesn't want people to cover them. They want people to promote them. They want people to hype them. They want PR. They don't want journalism that's ever involved in the sport. And it's really, it's painful to watch as a fan of the UFC and a fan of mixed martial arts. Instead of embracing a guy like Ariel, who not only covers the sport better than anybody else in the business, but who has done more for the sport from a coverage standpoint than anybody else in the business, Dana White continues to grind this axe. It was embarrassing for Patty because it's just so stupid to be talking again about a fight promoter or to a fight promoter about
using fighters for money.
Being using fighters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you're literally sitting across the table from the guy
Dana
who
White.
Does it the most. And you're talking about these thousands of dollars that Ariel is getting. And
even off of YouTube.
I loved it, too, where he's like, the thousands and thousands of pounds. You're like, okay, yeah. Thousands of pounds.
And Ariel just completely rebukes it.
Yeah. So that's obvious. I just think, again, it's embarrassing for the UFC that Dana is so passionate about trying to take people down that he views are against him, that he sees things the way that he does, that those are his priorities, that fighters can be distracted to that degree. Patty Pimblett is someone who could actually become a big enough star to help change the UFC's pay structure. And instead he's telling a journalist to get off his wallet instead of his boss, who is already a controversial figure in that regard. It's a pretty tough look for the sport. But ultimately, I think this is good for Ariel because it's proof of how big he is in that space, how important he is in that space, which is going after Ariel Helwani to try to promote a fight is more engaging, interesting content than anybody that Patty could have called out on the UFC roster right now.
Yeah.
So, again, it says this a lot about the state of the sport, and it says a lot about Helwani standing, as a journalist.
It says a lot about Dana White, too.
Well, yeah, I don't think
that's kind of obvious at this point.
I don't think Dana revealed anything that hasn't already been revealed.
No. It's just anyway. Same old words.
So, yeah, probably frustrating for Ariel to have to do that over the entire day, have to turn his show into... Like, he is a journalist. He doesn't want to be the story. I can tell you that. He wants the fighters to be the story, and that's the unfortunate part for him. But again, it really does say something about the career that he's built that the UFC's boss and one of their biggest fighters need to go after him to sell a fight. Anyways, what's next?
Yeah.
Dan is also not a fan of soccer, which I don't appreciate, but we'll move past that.
I think that's funny where he said it's unathletic.
Yeah. It's the dumbest take ever, but I won't harp too much on it. Cause I want to get to the Fred VanVleet thing.
Yeah.
Yesterday after the game, he talked about his whole social media thing where he unfollowed everyone.
Mm-hmm.
We do have the clip.
Don't worry about the clip because we're too tight for time.
JD, what's your rule on following and unfollowing on Instagram and Twitter?
So his explanation is he was trying to mess with the algorithm and so
fix the algorithm.
Yeah. See, I think that this is a clever way of unfollowing people that you don't want to follow.
I'm going to start using it.
I'm telling you, yeah, because if you unfollow everyone and someone asks you about it, you can just say, oh, I forgot to follow you back.
Yeah.
Because I think we all deal with this where we mute people. And they just go into the void.
Yeah, I have a lot of people muted.
Yeah, of course, we all do. What kind of lunatic doesn't have people muted?
Yeah.
So, game recognized game, Fred. I like the move. I like the move of trying to... the algorithm. I was opening things up and I saw things I didn't want on Instagram and Twitter. Yeah, that's the game.
Yeah, that's just
that's
part of the
app. That's what we have now. Those are the apps. Instagram used to be pictures of your friends. Now it's just memes... It's TikTok. It's slowly turning into crappier TikTok, I guess.
And
I still use it like it more than TikTok because I don't use TikTok. I'm too old.
I deleted TikTok.
At a kid.
I'm 14 years old and I deleted TikTok.
Yeah, you're my protege. Yeah, I'm going to turn you into an old man.
The algorithms, man.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. that's going to be my excuse for any time a thought pops up on my phone when I open it up. The algorithms, man. This is what this is all about. Oops.
The algorithms are horrible, though.
Yeah, we got to grind. Subscribe to the podcast, leave 5 stars, share it, do all those things. And hopefully we're back tomorrow with a more optimistic Blue Jays day. Oof.